Becoming a member at Navy Federal Credit Union could help you to earn more and save more. Their certificate options could earn you more than standard savings accounts with competitive rates.
Not all financial institutions offer you as many choices for savings options as Navy Federal does. For example, you can start your savings journey with a low minimum deposit, add money at any time, and watch your savings grow. Thanks to flexible terms, you can use Navy Federal savings options for all kinds of goals, short or long term. Navy Federal also offers equity loan options to help you get the funds you need to consolidate high interest debt, work on home improvements, or cover any of life's big expenses.
To learn more, visit NavyFederal.org. At Navy Federal, their members are the mission. Navy Federal is insured by NCUA, Equal Housing Lender, membership required. Terms and conditions apply, loan subject to approval.
Let's be honest. The first place our family turns to when we're looking for a quick getaway is always Airbnb. I know we can find an amazing place to stay at the beach, like St. Simon's on the Georgia coast, for instance. It's one of our favorite spots. That's what comes to mind, Matt, when I'm thinking about travel. And while you're staying at someone else's home, have you ever thought about what you could be doing with your own home?
That's right. Your empty space could be an Airbnb while you are away, because that is all you need to become an Airbnb host. It's a lot easier than you think, and you don't need to Airbnb your entire house. You could just host your extra spare room if you've got one. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Before AI can help your business predict demand, accelerate growth, inform decisions, automate tasks, reveal insights, generate content, you have to trust it. Introducing Watson X Governance, helping you govern any AI as data, models, and policies change so you can scale it responsibly. Let's create AI that begins with trust with Watson X Governance. Learn more at ibm.com/governance. IBM. Let's create.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Welcome to How to Money. I'm Joel.
And I'm Matt.
And today we're answering your listener questions.
That's right, buddy. We've got a Listener Question Monday episode lined up for our listeners. We've got five great ones, including a listener who's interested in snagging some of those bank bonuses. He wants to know if there's any downsides to that. We will discuss. Another listener is wanting to invest in the best way possible during this current market, this current bear market. So we will give our thoughts on that one. And another listener, he's got a kitchen appliance, frugal or cheap. I'm actually really looking forward to that question. It's a good one. We've got those plus two others. We're going to tackle all of those during this episode, man.
Frugals or cheap are always fun, because
they are fun.
It's just a little more personal, but
we get to interject some of our personal opinion little bit.
We all come down on different spots inside that argument from time to time in our own personal lives, right? Like, we all have those conundrums that we have to make. Like, is this purchase or is this not purchase?
Like, great about them is that, like, there's no clear right answer typically, right? Because it does come down to your personal opinion and how you feel about something, where you are on your financial journey, all of the above.
I literally saw on our Facebook group recently, somebody said, okay, so when I'm slower reading a book, and because of that, like, the library wants that book back before I'm ready to give it back. And he said, the way around this is to turn the Wi-Fi off, and that way the library can't rip that book out of my Kindle. And I was like, that's brilliant. Some people might say that's cheap. I'm going to say that's frugal. Turn the Wi-Fi off.
Interesting.
Keep reading until you're done, and then turn it back on so they can get their book back.
I might call that cheap.
Okay. I think it's frugal.
It's a good tactic. All right. I've got a quick little something I want to share with folks. You know, earlier, a few months ago, we dedicated an entire episode to some of the factors you need to consider when you are thinking about moving. That was actually episode 524. But within that episode, we talked about just all the different factors that we were considering, the different things that we took into account before we decided to move our families, the different things we wanted to prioritize.
Yeah. 20 miles north of the city. It's a big move for our families, even though it feels kind of small, just a 20 mile blip.
Culturally, it was a big move, yeah. I should say.
Yeah.
But I mean, the things that we talked about, though, I think it was a good episode. I think the parameters and the factors that we considered, I think they still hold. But one of the things we didn't consider was how creating a new community, basically finding new friends, how that was going to cost us money.
Well, that's because for you, Matt, in particular, you have to buy your friends.
That is true.
Yeah, you paid me off early on.
I have to pay folks. And then you're like, oh, I guess I can be this guy's real, actual friend. No, I wanted specifically to highlight the fact that we no longer have hand-me-downs. Back when we were living in town, I mean, we were living there for over a decade. And what that meant was years and years of developing friendships. Also, some of our friends who were developing friendships with had older kids, which meant we kind of had like the steady pipeline, the steady stream of hand-me-down clothes, in particular for our girls. And after, I mean, Kate was just like, oh my gosh, I can't believe how much money we're spending now on kids' clothes because we don't have those hand-me-downs.
Yeah.
And so I guess I wanted to mention that because that's really valuable if you have that built into your life. That's an awesome thing. Don't take it for granted. But this is also just something to keep in mind. It's not necessarily going to be a reason for you to not move if you feel like you should move or to stay put. But it is something to keep in mind. We are definitely seeing our clothing budget for the kids in particular impacted negatively because we don't have those hand-me-downs.
Yeah, it's funny. Our neighbors two doors down, they have a 4-year-old boy. We have a 3-year-old boy. And I was thinking,
is that working out?
Maybe we'll get some hand-me-downs, except for my 3-year-old is a giant. And he is
pretty tall.
He's probably wearing bigger clothes.
He's a freak.
Than the 4-year-old.
Like you.
Exactly. So no hand-me-downs probably coming from that direction. But no, you're right. That's a big, that can save a lot of money because especially when you're clothing as many kiddos as you are,
yeah.
That's a big deal.
Yeah, 4 kids, man. It's just not something we were considering.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden we're like, why are we spending so... we're having to buy clothes now. Whereas literally, I mean, I don't think we hardly ever purchase new clothes. Like maybe one new outfit a year, you know, like before you take pictures or something like that. And then they would just wear that outfit into the ground for the next year. In addition to all the old hand-me-downs that show up in the, you know, giant garbage bags.
They really are. You're right. I didn't even think about that. But that is just...
No, you'll feel it here soon.
Yeah, I know.
If y'all haven't already.
I'm sure. Well, I will say the nice thing about uniforms at school is we've had to buy fewer clothes and uniforms. There are used uniform sales at the school, which, I mean, you can get tops and bottoms for $2 or $3, like really cheap. So that has been helpful when it comes to our clothing budget.
Yep.
I've appreciated that. But yeah, that is a downside of moving. Although for the most part, it's been a good thing for both of our families. But
yeah, still for it. Still glad we did it. We're like 5 months in now. Definitely don't regret it.
Yep. Same here. All right. Let's move on, Matt. Let's mention the beer we're having on this episode. This is Utter Chaos. That's a cow pun.
This is a milk stout.
A milk stout.
I see what you did there.
By Talisman Brewing, and thanks to a friend of the show, Andy, for dropping this beer off for us. We'll give our thoughts at the end of the episode. But for now, Matt, let's get on to the topic at hand. We're answering listener questions.
Yes, we are.
For folks who want to ask us a question, we'd love to hear it. Just go to howtomoney.com/ask. There are simple instructions there for you to record a voice memo, send it our way, and hopefully we'll take it on the next Ask HTM episode. This first one that we're going to get to is a frugal or cheap about a dishwasher.
Hey, Matt and Joel. This is AB in San Antonio, Texas. My question today is kind of a frugal or cheap question also, kind of a 2-for-1 here. So I have a dishwasher that I never use for dishwashing. I use it more for storage. I don't know if it's a Latino thing, but we really don't use the dishwasher for washing dishes. So when I was remodeling my kitchen, I asked my wife, hey, why are we going to go and drop $600-$700 on a new dishwasher when we don't use it for dishwashing? How about we just install a new cabinet in that place? And the new cabinet is a lot less, maybe $100-$200 for the new cabinet. So by doing that, let's say in 2 years, 2-3 years, I want to either sell the house or rent it out. Would that hurt the value of the home for not having a dishwasher there? Or is it something that maybe people would turn a blind eye to? Is it something that maybe I should just bite the bullet right now and pay for the dishwasher and continue using it as storage? So then when I do go to resell or rent the place, it does have a dishwasher. What do you guys think? Thanks.
All right, AB, we appreciate your question. And for everyone else out there, for a little bit of context, we talked about how a good chunk of folks don't actually use their dishwashers in a recent episode.
Which I was just shocked to see that stat. Like, what was it, like a quarter of people don't use their dishwasher?
It was a surprisingly high percentage of folks.
We were like, what?
Yeah,
why?
It definitely wasn't something that I was aware of. Because instead, what they do, that like they opt to wash their dishes by hand. So that way, the dishwasher, it just often ends up being used the way that AB uses his, as an expensive storage device or a drying rack, which is what my mom did. It's also interesting, like maybe it's not a, I thought maybe it was an Asian thing. Because literally I hadn't heard of anybody else doing that really before I seen my mom doing that. And I was like, well, maybe that's just kind of like, maybe it's just a minorities thing. But I mean, what we would say is the biggest downside of doing this is actually that if you have a dishwasher, using it will, in fact, save you money because dishwashers, they use very little electricity, and you're going to use much less water than you would use if you were to wash the dishes by hand. Full-size dishwashers today, they can't use more than 5 gallons of water per load. And if you want to be considered an Energy Star appliance, you can only use 3.5 gallons. And so you compare that to an average of more than 26 gallons of water were you to wash an entire load by hand. You see how you would actually end up saving money this way by actually using your dishwasher. So, yeah, that being said, let's get into this frugal or cheap debate.
Yeah, let's do it. I'm going to say what AB is doing here is frugal and not cheap. That's kind of the TLDR. But
you think it's frugal for him to use his dishwasher as a storage device,
no,
for him to consider not putting one in.
For him to consider not putting one in this remodel. I would say that opting to forego installing a dishwasher in his house, if he doesn't use one, that makes sense to me. Like, why put in something that you're not going to use just because everybody else is doing it? Why spend hundreds of dollars, Matt, that he doesn't have to, if he's just not the dishwasher kind of person?
Or even like $1,000+ if you're looking at getting one of those German dishwashers
that
don't break.
Now you can get a Bosch for like $600. And by the way, when you look at,
you gotta get it on sale though.
Consumer Reports, the top dishwashers, Bosch. Takes like the top 10 spots.
I'm never going to buy any of the other dishwashers.
No.
I've fixed so many dishwashers now because you get one little thing that gets down there in that water pump, and that thing's toast.
The repairs are expensive, and so go with something that's tried and true, and this is not an advertisement for Bosch. This is just truly the ratings on Consumer Reports show that the Bosch dishwashers hold up better than the rest.
What we've experienced personally, and after talking with a plumber, he's just like, yeah, never have repair calls
right
on Bosch dishwashers.
Exactly.
They just work.
And I think the last one I got was like $550 or something. They're not like ridiculously expensive either. But I think it seems like a reasonable move to me to put a cabinet there or something like that instead of sticking a dishwasher there so that he can utilize it in a way that he's going to actually prefer to use it. But here's the thing. AB has to think about the future, because he mentioned moving out in a couple of years. And because this renovation, this kitchen remodel, isn't purely for his enjoyment, he has to be thinking about and is currently thinking about resale value or rental value in the future. You have to think about how other people are going to want to utilize that space, because it's not that far in the future when somebody else is going to be living there. So I don't know. I would just say that you have to think beyond just what you prefer in that kitchen remodel. You do want to choose something, like even when you think about something as simple as countertops and paint color, Matt. Those are the kind of things AB needs to consider if he wants to sell or rent it out 2 years from now. He wants to make sure it's palatable to a wider audience. And I do think having
a
dishwasher,
not offensive.
Yeah. And I do think having a dishwasher in that space is going to make it more palatable to a larger audience. So I think it's frugal to not put a dishwasher in if it's all about your personal enjoyment and consumption and this is a place you're planning to be for a long time. But it's less frugal if you're only doing what you want, knowing that you're not going to be in that place for very long.
Sure. Well, but that being said, you know, again, AB, he said that like this might be a Hispanic thing. Well, even if you were going to move out in a couple of years, there's a good chance that you would sell the house or rent this place to another Hispanic. I just looked up the demographics in San Antonio, and you're looking at about 65% of the population. And so, you know, again, this is, of course, assuming that this is more of a cultural thing, which we can't really speak to, but it is worth considering, AB, if a lot of folks you know are also barely using their dishwasher. Yeah. Well, maybe by not installing the dishwasher, it would even set your place apart because folks are like, oh yeah, no more wasted space due to the dishwasher being here that I never use. So I think that's worth, I don't know, keeping in mind. But, you know, Joel, I do think this is true. It could make sense to go ahead and install a dishwasher just for future use, perhaps. But that, like that being said, I think you could also hedge your bets a little bit here and just make sure and install the plumbing for a dishwasher, but then maybe just skip dropping the money on the actual dishwasher because, AB, you might find that, like, this isn't a Hispanic thing. Right,
it's just a you thing, a you and Matt's mom thing.
And if that's the case, like I'm guessing a good chunk of buyers and renters, like they would prefer to have that dishwasher in place. You know, I think that's more of an expectation these days, and that could increase your rent. You'll likely find that it's in that case that it would be financially savvy to go ahead and get one installed before listing it, either for sale or for rent. You know, while not having one while you're living in the home is totally fine. I think it does make sense to at least be prepared, sort of take a hybrid approach here and have the ability to install one in the future.
Yeah, I agree. And I think if AB is planning on being in this house for the next decade, do the remodel to your exact taste, your exact specifications. Don't worry nearly as much about resale value. I think a lot of people worry too much about resale value when they're doing renovations to their home. Especially if it's a home and a reno that they're doing where they plan to be there a long time. They're looking at what's going on HGTV as opposed to what they actually care about, what they want.
Right.
But you do have to think more about what other people want if you're not planning on being in that space for a long time, which it sounds like AB's not. And AB, best of luck as you hopefully become a landlord here in the near future, or if you sell, we hope you do well in that regard.
I really do like the fact that he's thinking 2 or 3 years out into the future, and he knows that, man, there's a very good possibility that this is going to be something we do, because that's going to keep him from maybe doing a remodel or a customization, Joel. That would only be for him and for his family. Instead, it is good to think a little more universally what would be universally appreciated.
Yeah, I mean, it would make me think twice about how much I'm spending on certain things. Am I getting custom cabinets or am I getting IKEA cabinets, right? Yeah. Am I getting
which are solid
$120 a square foot countertops, or am I getting the butcher block ones? Like, all the choices you're making and how much money you're spending on this remodel should be determined in a lot of ways based on the potential ROI of the money that you're spending right now, because you're thinking about this property as a future, as an investment, basically, something you're hoping to make money on. You have to think about that as you're making changes to the property now.
Totally. And another piece of unsolicited advice that you're not asking about, AB, don't get the Carrera marble countertops, because those jokers do not age well. I mean, they age. I guess that's the thing, right? Because granite, it's ageless. Like, you can't really, it's really difficult to destroy granite countertops. But if you go for that pretty, you know, white Carrera marble with the, you know, with the veins in it and that awesome look, that's fine. But it etches, it chips, it stains. And again, these are all factors to consider when you're doing a kitchen remodel.
Man, I don't know. I like those imperfections though, too. So same with butcher block. Like, butcher block gets little nicks in it and stuff like that.
I'm totally okay with that. Like, at our old house, we had Carrera marble. And for me personally, I was totally, we almost thought about like taking a lemon, cutting a lemon in half and just like going over the entire counter with it and literally etching the entire surface, because there's a few spots where it had etched.
Well, some people do that on purpose, right?
Yeah, rough, exactly. Yeah. And I'm totally fine with that. But other folks would see it and be like, oh, this looks kind of run down. You know, especially when it comes to resale, it's something that they're like, well, I'm going to have to drop $6,000 to $10,000 on countertops because obviously these are shot.
Yeah, and when you're doing stuff like if you're doing a remodel for yourself, again, like, you can think about your own taste, but when you're doing it as an investment, you have to think about other people's tastes, and you have to think about the price tag associated with catering to those tastes. So best of luck, AB, and we hope you come around on the dishwasher thing, because we think they can actually be a money saver and a time saver.
Oh we can actually, hopefully, maybe he does install it and he actually ends up using it, which will ultimately save him money.
Can we convert him to being a dishwasher user? I don't know. All right, we got more listener questions to get to, Matt, including one about car insurance. It's costing this mom an arm and a leg. We'll get to that and more right after this.
Joel, so we were just recounting our trip to Scotland. This is the trip that we took this time last year, actually, with some of our friends over the weekend. And one of the highlights from Edinburgh was stumbling upon the absolute best meat pie shop. Mm-hmm. They were fresh out of the oven. They had that perfectly flaky crust. But guess what? That serendipitous experience would never have happened if we'd stayed at a boring hotel. We had found the perfect flat in the coolest part of town, thanks to Airbnb.
Ah, Matt, I'm still dreaming about those meat pies. You're making me drool. And while turning to Airbnb might be a no-brainer when you're looking to spend some money on travel, it might not be the first thing you think of when you're looking to make some money. Why let it sit empty, your house, when it could be earning extra income, though? It's the financially smart thing to do. Hosting can easily fit into your lifestyle and is a great way to earn some extra dough.
Yeah, that's right. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host. You probably think it's too soon to join AARP, right? Well, let's take a minute to talk about it. Where do you see yourself in 15 years? More specifically, your career, your health, your social life? What are you doing now to help you to get there? Well, there are tons of ways for you to start preparing today for your future with AARP.
What about that dream job you've dreamt about? Sign up for AARP reskilling courses to help make it a reality. How about that active lifestyle you've only spoken about from the couch? AARP has health tips and wellness tools to keep you moving for years to come. But none of these experiences are without making friends along the way. Connect with your community through AARP volunteer events.
So, it's safe to say, it's never too soon to join AARP. They're here to help your money, your health, and happiness live as long as you do. That's why the younger you are, the more you need AARP. Learn more at aarp.org/wisefriend.
Matt, I love hearing from How to Money listeners who are pumped about a major accomplishment, right? Paying off debt, maxing out a retirement account contribution, or paying cash for a car. Like, those are all killer achievements. Those ecstatic emails, they get me stoked. And maybe a little less flashy, but still a crucial accomplishment, is creating a will. And Trusted Will rocks for that task. The things that people build their futures around are things worth protecting. Making an estate plan now means gaining security of your assets and peace of mind for you and your loved ones.
That's right. And with Trust and Will, you can create and manage a custom estate plan starting at just $199. Go to trustandwill.com/howtomoney for 10% off plus free document shipping. Keep your family prepared and protected by managing your will or trust online. And each will or trust is state specific and customized to your needs.
Secure your assets and protect your loved ones with Trust and Will. Get 10% off plus free shipping of your estate plan documents by visiting trustandwill.com/howtomoney. That's 10% off and free shipping at trustandwill.com/howtomoney. Did you know that money issues are a leading cause of divorce? Monarch, the top-rated personal finance app, also has built-in collaboration features so that you can invite your partner at no extra cost. Together, you can see all your finances, you can collaborate on your budget, and you can get insights into your cash flow and recurring transactions. Emily and I, we've been using Monarch together. It's been a great way to get on the same page with money together. We're able to log in and see our real-time financial stats whenever we want, including a current net worth number, which is a great way to track overall progress.
That's a ton of fun too. Yeah, Monarch is the top-rated all-in-one personal finance app, and it gives you a comprehensive view of all your accounts, investments, transactions, and more. You can create custom budgets, track progress towards financial goals, and collaborate with your partner, like Joel just mentioned. And now you can get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/howtomoney. Unlike other personal finance apps out there, Monarch's simple, intuitive design makes it so easy to set up and to get budgeting. And it's really customizable as well. I'm a big fan of being able to set up automatic rules for different transactions.
After trying out Monarch myself, I understand why it's the top-rated personal finance app. And right now, listeners of this show will get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/howtomoney. That's monarchmoney.com/howtomoney. For your extended 30-day free trial, go to monarchmoney.com/howtomoney for an extended 30-day free trial.
All right, we're back from the break, taking listener questions. And before we get to that car insurance question, let's hear one from a listener who's asking about bank bonuses.
Hey, Matt and Joel, this is Jeff from Phoenix, Arizona. I've been a listener for about a year, and I want to thank you so much for all the good information that you put out. My financial life has changed dramatically since I have started listening, so thank you. My question for you today is, I get offers in the mail from the big banks saying if I open an account and start direct deposit, that I can get a $200 or $300 bonus. I do read the fine print, And it looks like I have to open an account and start direct deposit. But it usually is not a huge amount that I have to have direct deposited in there. And as long as it's there for 90 days, I can get $200 or $300. What are the downsides to this? I feel like I can split up my paycheck between a few of these banks, and after the 90 days is up and I get my bonus, close the accounts. Seems like a no-brainer to do this because the amounts are usually very low that I have to deposit. Thanks so much again for all you do.
Jeff, man, we appreciate your question, and this is a good one for personal finance nerds out there, Matt, because savings accounts, by the way, have gotten just better recently. For a long time, man, it felt like, we always said cash is not trash, but it felt like cash was trash because you couldn't get paid anything on it, but that's been changing. And let's talk about account bonuses in particular, because they can be a great way to juice returns on your savings, which obviously interest rates are going up, better for savers. Online banks now are paying, at least some of them, north of 3% on savings, which for a long time, what we thought half a percent was great.
Half a percent was standard.
Even though that was pathetic, really. And that's not life-changing money, but it's at least a massive jump from where rates were years ago. And it's just nice to see that savers aren't getting clobbered in the way that they were 2, 3, 4 years ago. But those bonuses that you can snag for opening up a new account can make the potential hassle worth it. They can actually juice those earnings. And so, yeah, we think that the bank account bonus game is worth pursuing for lots of folks.
For sure. Yeah. Some banks will pay you a few $100, but others will pay you a lot of money, like $1,000 or more. And you often score those bigger bonuses by funding that account with more money, with larger deposits. And so the hoops that you'll have to jump through in order to snag the bonus, they're going to be different for each offer. And so with that in mind, Jeff, it is really important to read the fine print.
And he said he's reading the fine print, which I got to say, kudos.
That's what you got to do.
A lot of people are going to see the headline number and then they might attempt to get the bonus and miss out.
Exactly, yeah. And so, I mean, different accounts, like some are going to require you to have like a certain number of direct deposits, but others will want you to use like the debit card associated with that account a certain number of times, like 10, 12 times a month, whereas others will maybe want that money deposited for a minimum period of time, right? Like they're going to want you to keep that in there for 2 to 3 months. But just know what's required in advance so that you can make sure that you hit all those metrics in order to actually make sure you receive that bonus that you actually get paid.
All right, so can I just say, I'm not as good as Jeff at this. And I didn't screw up, but I'm still.
Did you not read the fine print?
Well, I'm going to get the bonus. I mistook the fine print. And so what they said, I just figured this out. I opened up an account with Citibank to get a bonus. And it basically said that I needed to meet these requirements within 60 days. And it looked like what I thought was, and then after 90 days, you get the payout. And I was like, okay, cool. I can do that. But no, it wasn't after 90 days I get the payout. It was basically the 60 plus 90. So it was 150 days until I get the payout.
Sneaky.
It was sneaky wording. Wow. I didn't pay attention to the specific linguistics that Citibank was using. And so I'm going to get the bonus. I just have to wait longer.
You're tied up for
than I thought.
A few more months than you thought.
Yep.
Got it.
So kind of frustrating, but it's one of those things where if you play this game, you really do need to pay attention to the specific language and not just the hoops you need to jump through, but the time period, because you might find out that your money is stuck in one place longer than you hoped.
Gotcha. It definitely, like this strategy, this approach definitely lends itself to those who are into the details, into the all the technicalities. And so Jeff, let's share where you might find the best sign-up bonuses for bank accounts, because you might get an email or maybe you'll get a physical mailer at your house. And some of those accounts might be targeted offers that may not be available to other folks. But even still, they may not be the best offers, the best bonuses out there. And so if you're going to do this, we want you to get the most money that you possibly can. And you typically do this by being proactive about it. You got to go out there and search for one. And we would recommend that you check out Doctor of Credit. That's a site that we typically turn to. We'll link to their bank account bonus page. But they just do a great job of keeping that page up to date. And they will help you to find and apply for the best bonus offers out there. And also, we're pretty big fans of doing something similar with credit cards. The bonuses that they offer, they can easily be in the $700 to $1,000 range just for using that new card for spending that you were already planning to do. And so the easiest place for you to see those bonuses is to head to our new credit card tool. Head to howtomoney.com/creditcards, and you can easily sort by cashback and see some of the best bonus offers available to you.
And the upside to the credit card bonus versus the bank bonus is that the credit card bonus is not taxable, whereas the bank account bonus is taxable. You're going to have to pay tax on whatever that bonus was that you received. So let's say it's a $350 bonus. Well, minus, I don't know, 18 or 20%.
Yeah.
whatever your income tax rate is from that number.
Heck yeah.
And one last thing we want to stress, though, is to think intelligently about your time. It's important to know your hourly rate and how much it's worth. Like, how much time can you pour into this? And at some point, are you using your time inefficiently? And the easier bonus grabs, they really shouldn't take too much effort on your part, right? But it is possible to be more cheap than frugal by attempting to get too many of these bonuses, or ones that maybe aren't paying out as much, like a $100 or $150 bonus that takes 5 hours of your time. That's a different value proposition than a $500 one, right? Mm-hmm. That takes the same amount of effort. So just a heads up, think about that ahead of time. But the good thing is, unlike opening and closing credit card accounts, Matt, which you talked about, there is no negative impact on your credit for banks. That's something I think people have a question about sometimes. When you open or close credit cards, that's going to impact your credit score. But when you open new bank accounts, that doesn't have any impact. Like, the credit bureaus don't even know that it's happening. And so that's not going to impact you in that regard.
That being said, you apply for a new credit card, typically you're only going to see like a temporary 5-point drop.
Sure.
Nothing too big.
Yeah. Well, which is important, sure, if you're applying for a new loan in the very near future.
That's true.
But for most folks, a minor blip. But as long as it's worth your time, if the financial benefits are excellent enough, we'd say, why not take advantage of these bonuses? It's something clearly that we do ourselves, even if we don't do it perfectly from time to time. Like me. But I have taken advantage of multiple bank account bonus offers in the past, and I see myself doing more in the future.
That's right, man. All right, let's get to our next question. And this is from a mother. She's got a question about her teenage son and car insurance. Let's hear it.
Hello, Matt and Joel. Thanks so much for responding to my email. My name is Yolanda, and I live in Memphis, Tennessee. And my question is in regards to car insurance coverage for my 18-year-old son. He is currently away at school in Nashville, and I'm trying to determine whether or not to carry full coverage insurance on his vehicle. He has a 2012 Nissan Altima, and the car is owned. There's not a note on the car. Before I changed the insurance over to a separate policy, which I was told I had to do by Geico since the car would not be in Memphis the majority of the time, I was paying around over $500 for car insurance for the both of us. Currently, I'm only carrying the required amount of liability, comprehensive, and roadside service on his car. And I'm really trying to determine, do I really need to cover collision on a car that's that old? And how would you go about trying to determine how much insurance is enough? Thanks for your time. And I really enjoy the podcast.
She say a Nissan Altima? Didn't you have a Nissan Altima?
Oh, yeah.
Somewhat recently?
Yeah. Loved my Nissan Altima. $3,200.
It was a Hunter Green?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I think when we first met.
That was the last stick shift automobile that I owned.
Oh, that's
and I
right.
loved it.
It also had the tint, like the tint was on the back off. Window. That was halfway peeled off.
Yes.
Yeah. Classic.
I'm very classy.
Well, the best part was that I remember you telling me the story, because that was like an ex-girlfriend. Oh.
She was like, why don't we get rid of this awful window tinting and we'll make it look better? And she halfway peeled it off and it just looked worse.
She just like gave up.
Yeah. Then I dumped her. So
get out of my car.
Yes.
Forever.
Well, let's get to the question. Let's talk about Yolanda and her son and this conundrum they're in. And teenagers or college students and car insurance, they typically don't play well together. Young drivers.
I'm not looking forward to having a house full.
I know.
Household full of young teenage drivers.
Young drivers make car insurance a lot more expensive. And I will say something that's going in Yolanda's favor here is that they own the car outright.
Heck yeah.
That's a big help, because that gives you more options to get those premiums down. Because if you did have a car note, the lender's likely going to require you to have full coverage. And with this vehicle being, I'm going to call it a preteen, in terms of model years, it, not only should you consider Yolanda for going collision, but you should also likely consider dropping comprehensive coverage as well. Mm-hmm. And so much depends on how much that it's going to drop the premium. And if you have the ability to self-insure, you know, we're definitely making a case for having at least $5,000 in an emergency fund, because it's not wise to get rid of that additional coverage if you don't have the cash to replace the vehicle if it gets totaled. You want to make sure you can buy another car outright if your son gets into an at-fault accident. But if I were you and had the money set aside, I would feel comfortable with only the minimum coverage on this car.
Totally. Yep, I would as well, man. Yolanda, something else that you're going to want to do is to shop your coverage around. Like currently, you certainly might have the best rate right now, but it's tough to know until you actually do some comparison shopping. And you can, you know, do this on your own by calling around. Maybe you can email some different insurance companies. You can call an independent agent or an insurance broker where you live, and they can often shop with rates with multiple providers on your behalf. Basically, you want somebody who is on your side, not somebody who's basically employed by an insurance company. But then you can look online as well. Head to Policy Genius. They also offer a free service where they help you to shop rates with some of the main companies out there. It's just important to keep in mind that loyalty does not pay in this case. And you just might be able to save, you know, hundreds of dollars a year or more just by jumping ship. It makes me think about, like we're talking about Jeff and how banks are increasing the rates that they're paying out. Well, guess what? The bigger banks don't have to do that because of consumer inertia. And the mm-hmm. same thing applies when it comes to something like insurance. Like nobody wants to take the time to have to shop their coverage around. Nobody wants to have to go to a new bank. And the companies, the banks, the insurance provider, like they know this. And so they don't have to offer you the best rate because they know most folks are just going to stick around no matter what.
That's why Bank of America, Wells Fargo are paying 0.01% on your savings accounts.
Joel.
I
think they increased it to like 0.02.
I don't even know if they
just
have.
Just so you know.
Okay. All right. Well, if they have, congratulations.
A 100% increase.
And they probably put that out in their newsletter and make people feel good, but really.
Like the shareholders, like, yeah, no, it's like, oh, wow, we're really doing something great for folks out there.
Still getting screwed. Exactly. So yeah, jumping ship loyalty doesn't always pay. You're spot on there, Matt. And so at least shopping the open market to see if you can find a better rate elsewhere. That is where some steep savings can be found. It's also important to ask about discounts, right? Because you might not even be getting the best rate that your own insurance company is offering because you have it. Like Matt, you should hear the way I talk to people at the insurance company. I'm begging for discounts, basically. And they're like, well, I'm sorry, sir. I don't know if we have any more. I'm like, check again.
You got to ask them three times. I've heard this. I don't know how true this is. And specifically with insurance, but there's a certain number of times you have to ask before a lot of times customer service representatives will then say, okay, let me see what I can do for you. And in which case they'll give you the better rate.
Yeah. And with my agent recently, I was getting quotes from someone else. And I think that kind of lit a fire. She was like, well, let me look for additional discount for you.
Nice.
And so, yeah, you have to ask about those because it's smart to ask about, you know, other things that can be applied to your account, like a low mileage discount, or you've got a son in school, a good student discount. Maybe make a deal with your son, right? You can split whatever discount you're able to score from him getting good grades.
Yeah.
That's a good way to go. And it may not be much, but even those small incentives can have a positive impact. They can lower your bill, your insurance bill.
Plus, maybe he'll make better grades.
Right, right.
Like, so win-win. You're making more saving more money, but also, man, you are crushing it in school, buddy.
That's right. And one other like little thing that a lot of people, almost nobody does, but it can give you additional savings on your insurance bill is to complete a defensive driving course. It takes like 45 minutes online to complete some of these courses.
This is one of your favorite things.
Yeah, I love this one because it's very inexpensive and it can save you hundreds of dollars over the year, like scrounging for those discounts, like sucking up whichever ones they will throw your way. Like say, which ones do you have that I'm not eligible for and how can I become eligible for them? Like that's a good question to ask.
Which discounts am I not asking about that you know about?
That you have, but I'm not qualifying for at this current moment, because then that gives you an idea of what you can do. Like there's even the tracking devices, Matt, that they'll let you put in your car for 60 or 90 days.
I'm if you're a good driver. An invasion of privacy to save some money, baby.
Exactly. If it means it's going to lower your bill, like I'm all for it.
Absolutely. Yolanda, one other thing worth mentioning here if it is prohibitively expensive for your son to have a car at college, it might be worth asking if there's another option. You know, like, does he really need to have a car at school? Maybe instead he could ride with friends. Maybe he could bike more. That's obviously something we're fans of. Maybe he can take Uber or Lyft on the occasion that he needs to get somewhere off campus. Like, I know that car ownership at college is a nice perk for a young person to have, but all of those costs add up, you know? Like, we're not just talking about insurance. We're talking about the cost of gas, car maintenance, student parking permits on campus. Those can be really expensive as well. Not to mention, like, I'm pretty sure the majority of speeding tickets I got, Joel, were while I was in college. And guess what? Yeah. When you're not driving, you don't get speeding tickets. You don't get moving violations or whatever.
I think I've had one in my post-college adult life, and I was going 5 miles an hour with the speed limit.
Dude.
Which you're not supposed to get speeding tickets for that.
Well, yeah. So all that being said, like, all of these costs add up. And, you know, if it's just too expensive, even after you do shop around your insurance rates, it might be worth having a tough conversation with him. Or maybe, you know, he can foot some of the insurance bill himself. We just don't want you to think that this is completely on your shoulders. Yeah. We want you to realize that there are alternatives. It's not like him having a car off at school. Like, that is a non-negotiable.
And Yolanda said it was $500, but she didn't specify how often. I'm guessing that means a month, which is just a ton of money to be spending on insurance. We're talking about something close to $6,000 a year on car insurance. So yeah, you're right. Like, is there another option? Like, rideshare could be cheaper, right, than insuring this car for your teenage driver.
Certainly with full coverage, at the very least. Like we said, there's a reason we started there, because that's going to have a significant impact.
And at some point,
you take maybe more drastic measures.
Yeah, and at some point, if these attempts at getting a discount, at paying less money on insurance, they're not working, they're not bringing down the bill enough, you have to consider more drastic options, like you mentioned, which could be no car on the college campus for your son, or at least him contributing to that prohibitively expensive bill.
Yeah.
And lastly, I wanted to mention roadside service. Yolanda mentioned that. We would encourage you to drop that coverage for sure. It's actually best not to have this coverage, we would say, because you don't ever want to make a claim on that coverage. And if you do make a roadside claim with your automobile insurance company, it's going to go on this thing called your CLU report, which stands for Comprehensive Loss Underwriting Exchange. It's this industry database, and it's going to make it much harder for you to get coverage with another insurer in the future if you have a claim there. And it's not just a claim like, hey, I got hit and I have to make a repair and I needed my insurance to pay out. Literally just getting a tow 2 miles to your mechanic is going to go on this CLU report. It counts almost in the exact same way. So if you do want roadside coverage, if that is going to put you at ease, AAA is a much better option because it's not associated with your insurance company. So yeah, make sure to drop that insurance provided roadside assistance. You don't want that. You want to go with a third party instead.
Yeah. Yolanda's got currently she's got like the Cadillac of insurance policies, where she's got full coverage. She's got the roadside assistance. We didn't even mention this as well, but consider raising your deductibles as well, because if you've got that set to something really low, like $100, you want that significantly higher. Of course, you want to, again, consider how much money you've got set aside. You want to consider what car it is that you're driving as well, to make sure that you're properly insured. But we think that there are a lot of steps that you can take in order to get that insurance bill down. And Yolanda, we wish you the best of luck. Joel, we've got a couple additional questions we're going to get to. We're going to talk about one of the ways that you can juice your kids' credit score. It's totally legal, by the way. When you say juice, it makes you think of like an illegal doping substance. It
makes me think of Barry Bonds.
It's on the juice. We'll get to that plus our other question right after this. Joel, so we were just recounting our trip to Scotland. This is the trip that we took this time last year, actually, with some of our friends over the weekend. And one of the highlights from Edinburgh was stumbling upon the absolute best meat pie shop.
Mm-hmm.
They were fresh out of the oven. They had that perfectly flaky crust. But guess what? That serendipitous experience would never have happened if we'd stayed at a boring hotel. We had found the perfect flat in the coolest part of town, thanks to Airbnb.
Ah, Matt, I'm still dreaming about those meat pies. You're making me drool. And while turning to Airbnb might be a no-brainer when you're looking to spend some money on travel, it might not be the first thing you think of when you're looking to make some money. Why let it sit empty, your house, when it could be earning extra income, though? It's the financially smart thing to do. Hosting can easily fit into your lifestyle and is a great way to earn some extra dough.
Yeah, that's right. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host. You probably think it's too soon to join AARP, right? Well, let's take a minute to talk about it. Where do you see yourself in 15 years? More specifically, your career, your health, your social life. What are you doing now to help you to get there? Well, there are tons of ways for you to start preparing today for your future with AARP.
What about that dream job you've dreamt about? Sign up for AARP reskilling courses to help make it a reality. How about that active lifestyle you've only spoken about from the couch? AARP has health tips and wellness tools to keep you moving for years to come. But none of these experiences are without making friends along the way. Connect with your community through AARP volunteer events.
So, it's safe to say, it's never too soon to join AARP. They're here to help your money, your health, and happiness live as long as you do. That's why the younger you are, the more you need AARP. Learn more at aarp.org/wisefriend.
Did you know that money issues are a leading cause of divorce? Monarch, the top-rated personal finance app, also has built-in collaboration features so that you can invite your partner at no extra cost. Together, you can see all your finances, you can collaborate on your budget, and you can get insights into your cash flow and recurring transactions. Emily and I, we've been using Monarch together. It's been a great way to get on the same page with money together. We're able to log in and see our real-time financial stats whenever we want, including a current net worth number, which is a great way to track overall progress.
That's a ton of fun too, yeah. Monarch is the top-rated all-in-one personal finance app, and it gives you a comprehensive view of all your accounts, investments, transactions, and more. You can create custom budgets, track progress towards financial goals, and collaborate with your partner, like Joel just mentioned. And now you can get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/howtomoney. Unlike other personal finance apps out there, Monarch's simple, intuitive design makes it so easy to set up and to get budgeting. And it's really customizable as well. I'm a big fan of being able to set up automatic rules for different transactions.
After trying out Monarch myself, I understand why it's the top-rated personal finance app. And right now, listeners of this show will get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/howtomoney. That's monarchmoney.com/howtomoney. For your extended 30-day free trial, go to monarchmoney.com/howtomoney for an extended 30-day free trial.
If you're listening to this podcast right now and you're a small business owner, listen up. Upswell Marketing would like to remind you that when customers choose your small business, they're actually choosing you. So focus on super serving your existing customers and let Upswell handle the pipeline generation of new leads and customers. They do everything from hyper-targeting best fit prospects through campaign optimization. Upswell Marketing's unique approach includes direct mail, search engine marketing, and social media ads, and has fueled more than 10,000 small business success stories. Upswell specializes in developing customized direct response campaigns and is now offering a no-obligation free assessment of your current marketing strategies. Not to mention, new customers also receive 15% off their first order when they mention that they heard about Upswell on this podcast. For more information, visit upswellmarketing.com. That's upswellmarketing.com.
All right, we're back. We're still taking your listener questions. And Matt, a lot of people have questions about investing in a volatile market. Yeah. But we have a specific one from a listener here who wants to know, how do I invest safely right now?
Hi, guys. This is Mohit. I'm from Pittsburgh. Love listening to your show. Had a question about investing in today's market. What do you guys recommend, like going for federal investment bonds, which right now are giving a decent interest rate? 4.5%, or putting money in Vanguard ETFs, because those right now are at their lowest since some time, and we know that they'll probably go up, but the uncertainty is when will they go up. So wanted to see what your thoughts on this are. Hope I get included in the podcast. Thank you.
All right, Mohit, of course, we are more than happy to feature your question here on the Ask How to Money episode.
Most definitely.
As well as give our thoughts on your investing question here. Because yeah, you know, like where you would stick your money, like when the market's, it's still significantly down. It's still pretty volatile these days and is down from its peak that we saw earlier this year. And so you mentioned a few options, and let's maybe start with the least risky possibility, which is cash, because, you know, we just talked about this, but rates are ticking up steadily on both savings and money market accounts. And so you could opt to stash some of your money there. Plus, everyone needs access to a certain amount of liquid funds no matter what. But even still, like we said before, even though savers, you know, they're not getting clobbered like we used to back in the day, it's still not an ideal place to hold just a great deal of cash. So for most folks, we're talking about having at least 3 to 6 months of expenses in that account. And the truth is, you know, the greater risk that you're taking on if you opt to have excess cash on hand is going to be inflation, reducing its purchasing power over time. And so that's something you got to keep in mind. You want to find that balance between having some on hand, but not too much.
And that was always the case. But obviously, clearly, we're seeing inflation impact our money in real time.
Oh, yeah.
Normally, it's kind of like slowly eating away our money and like barely noticeable. But now it's easier to see. And
yep.
And you're right, Matt. There are more medium-term options, too, that are worth discussing. So savings accounts are one of those short-term options for people and just a necessity for anyone really to have some of their savings stored away. But treasury bills, for instance, are getting more pressed right now. We've seen rates on those skyrocket. You can get a one-year T-bill at a rate of just over 4% right now. One-month T-bills are paying like 3.25%, something like that, which is really good. But here's the thing. CIT is paying something like, which is a bank that we talk about from time to time, they're paying one of the absolute highest savings rates in the country, and they're paying 3% in just that boring old savings
Heck
account.
Yeah.
So although those T-bill rates have gone up, they're not necessarily a whole lot better than what we're seeing from just a traditional bank and old school plain vanilla savings account.
Yeah, it may not be worth it considering the fact that that money's locked up for a certain amount of time.
Yeah. And then there's the other option is I-bonds, because although the rate has dropped off some recently, they're still paying a better rate than T-bills too. So, you know, while they make sense for some folks, they are a great place to park cash for a short period of time. I-bonds aren't a great long-term investment either. So those are some decent options, and they have clearly gotten better over the past year or so. But it still doesn't mean that that's the best place for you to be sticking
right.
your money.
Yeah, that's not where we want the majority of your cash, because we think that the best long-term investments are going to be, and we've remained fairly consistent about this, the stock market. And like right now, it's actually a better time to buy because the stock market is on sale right now. And so, Mahit, you mentioned Vanguard ETFs. It depends specifically on which ones that you're opting to stick your money in, because you can buy ETFs that invest in specific different sectors of the market. We prefer a total stock market or the S&P 500 approach. Finding an index fund that mirrors those indexes is what we would recommend. It's what we do. And, you know, you mentioned that you don't know when it is that the market is going to go up. And that's true. Well, guess what? We don't know either. But the cool thing about the market is that it's forward looking. That's why, you know, even when the world was falling apart during COVID, the market, it actually recovered really, really quickly. And the same thing applies here. You know, the market, it seems to be expecting a recession in the nearest future. But, you know, like when and if that even happens, when that recession hits, the market, it's already going to be on the way up in all likelihood.
Yeah, it's always weird to see a lot of tough things happening in the economy and the stock market going up. But you're right, man. It's because the market is more forward looking. They're not looking at the numbers that got reported yesterday. They're looking at kind of what's happening 6, 8, 12 months in the future. Mm-hmm. That is where investors, that's where their gaze is set. And Mohit, if you opt to go this route, by the way, make sure you're investing with a long-term time horizon, because yes, the market is going to be a great place for you to stash your money for the future, but so much of your decision needs to be based around your specific timeline. If you're looking to take this money out a year or two from now, you might be putting yourself at undue risk. And the longer you have, the more likely it is that you should be investing. And let me just drive home just how smart it is to be investing right now. Because when the recovery happens, and it historically happens quickly and with great force, you're going to want to be a part of that. And when you look at a chart of historical drawdowns of 25% or more, which is what we've experienced this year, the average market return 1 year later is 21%. And the 3-year average is almost 37%. And then the 5-year average is almost 83%. And so those are historical averages, right? Like Matt and I, nobody out there can guarantee where the market's going to be 1, 3, or 5 years from today. But even though history doesn't repeat, it does tend to rhyme. And we would say we feel better investing today than we did in January. And we think every listener should. Like, the bear market shouldn't frighten you. It should actually make you feel more confident in the prospects that every dollar you put in now is likely to be worth more in the medium and long-term future than dollars you put in 6 months ago.
That's true. Yeah, like I was thinking about saying that the way I invest now during a volatile bear market is no different than how I invest during a smooth sailing bull market. But that's actually not true, because I'm actually investing more now. Like, I've invested more in the past few months because the market is on sale than I typically would. And so what that means, like, literally I keep a 6+ months amount of emergency funds sitting around because that's how our family feels comfortable. But because of the fact that the market was on sale, I felt comfortable pulling some of that money out and channeling that towards investments. And so whereas before I had 6+ months worth of living expenses set aside, it's closer to like 4 to 5 months now. And that's not something I would do when the market is basically at all-time highs. And so while other folks, they're diving for cover and they're looking for investments that feel a little bit safer, this is a perfect opportunity to basically zig while everybody else is zagging, to buy the U.S. economy while it is on sale. And so let's go ahead now, get to our last question of the episode. And we've got a listener here who is wondering basically what it means to be an authorized user on a credit card.
Hi, this is Kenton from Ohio. I just had a quick question on credit cards. When a kid turns 18, should you take them off as an authorized user, or should you keep them on? And if you do take them off, will that close their longest line of credit? Thanks for the help.
Kent, this is a great question. And, you know, it's something actually we talked about recently on the show in episode 587, when we talked about setting your kids up for financial success.
Yep. Talked about that last week.
Yeah, we mentioned that making your kid an authorized user is kind of an advanced move that can help your kid build credit standing before they're actually prepared to go out and do that on their own. And part of that, by the way, we mentioned that helping your kid become financially savvy beyond just helping set up their credit score for success, it's helping them understand how credit scoring works too. So that's something you want to do hopefully in their teenage years.
Yeah, so it's not just doing something for them, but walking them through that process and giving them the knowledge that they can do it on their own eventually.
That's right. But adding them as an authorized user on one of your credit cards is the best way to get them started down the path of having an excellent credit standing that they can wield successfully in the coming years. And by the way, it's not very difficult to do. It's one of those processes that's going to give them benefit, but it's also going to take you just 30 seconds to a minute of your time. It's one of the, you log into the back end of your credit card account. You can easily find the place to add authorized users to your account, and toss as many kiddos as you have, like toss them on there and make sure that your good credit card usage is actually helping them build their own solid credit standing for the future.
Exactly. But the opposite, of course, is also true. If you are not paying your bills on time and in full every month, that's going to reflect negatively on their credit report. And the cool thing is too,
so you have to be really confident that you're going to use
exactly.
it well, or you're hurting your kids.
Yeah. And you can pretty much do this at any age, regardless of how old your kid is, except for Amex. I know that they require your kid to be at least 13 years old before you can add them. But now that we've identified that, you know, authorized user status, that this is a good thing, how long should your kids be piggybacking, right? And when should you cut the umbilical cord, Kent, where you're making them establish their own credit standing? Well, you ideally want these phases to overlap, right? Like, that makes sense. It's a good idea to wait until they've got a couple of lines of credit on their own that they're handling effectively and handling responsibly and well before you pull, you know, the authorized user rug out from under them, because it's going to negatively impact their credit score. And the reason for that is because not only will you be removing their oldest line of credit, where you're going to be shortening their credit history basically, but you're also reducing the overall amount of credit available to them, which would potentially raise their credit utilization rate. And so, you know, with that in mind, you know, once they do have their own credit cards, once they have transitioned to using them well, I think then is actually a good time to remove that authorized user status.
Yeah, and you're right, Matt. It could impact literally the two biggest factors that make up your credit score in one fell swoop, which, if they haven't established enough credit standing, personal credit history yet, when you go about the process of removing them as an authorized user on your own credit card, then they could feel a significant pinch to their credit score for a while. And yeah, like you said, it's going to negatively impact their credit score. So it's going to be prudent to talk about this with them before you actually pull the rug out. Sure, before you do give them the boot on that authorized user status, because you wouldn't want to have forgotten about their status and then give them the boot right as they're trying to get a mortgage, pinching them at the worst possible time.
It's like, this is why I've been working to have such a good credit score so that I can get a decent loan.
Yeah.
And you're upsetting the apple cart at the most inopportune time.
Right, exactly. So yeah, you're going to want to have that dialogue and say, listen, okay, are you applying for credit anytime in the next 6 months to a year? If you're not applying for anything meaningful, like a mortgage in particular, that's when it's going to have the biggest impact.
Sure.
Then you can time it appropriately. And the thing is, I guess, like, you could even keep them on your, as an authorized user on your account indefinitely until they are grown adults, right? But
like, there's no, like he said, when they're 18, like, there's no rule that says, like, when they hit 18 that they have to automatically get kicked off,
right?
Or like, just because they're technically an adult now doesn't mean that they can't stay on as an authorized user for like another 10 years perhaps.
Like 28, 32. It doesn't really matter.
Yeah. There really isn't any like sweat off of Kent's back necessarily.
Yeah. But
like, piggybacking makes it sound like he's like working hard to do this thing, but like, really, there truly is no additional effort required by him.
That's true. But there is the potential for a little bit of at least additional risk since your credit is going to be intertwined. And assuming that your child has a solid score in the 740 plus range, then they're in a great position to go it alone from here on out.
Yeah.
We would say, like, as they transition into adulthood, ask them questions about their own usage, how their score is doing, and, you know, if they're in a great position, let them go it alone from here on out. But the key is to, at least briefly, allow your child as a young adult to establish their own smart credit usage before you cut those ties and attempt with their input to time it well so that you're not hamstringing them as they're trying to make a major purchase.
Yeah, it basically would be kind of defeating the entire purpose of giving them that head start on their credit score if you were to unplug it right before they're looking to use it for the biggest purchase of their life. Kent, we wish you the best of luck, but Joel, let's shift gears and get back to the beer that you and I enjoyed during this episode. This was Utter Chaos, which is a chocolate milk stout by Talisman Brewing. Big thanks to Andy for donating this one to the show. What were your thoughts on this one?
Yeah, so milk stouts are an interesting category, and I feel like for stouts oftentimes can be harder for novice beer aficionados to get into, but I feel like a milk stout is one of those things that almost anybody can enjoy. It's like, if you like Yoo-hoo, you might like a milk stout. And so I think this one, yeah, it's super approachable. It's not a very heavy beer. So you might think milk stout, oh, it's going to be robust and too much and overwhelming. But no, this feels like a light version of a stout in a lot of ways. So if you like dark flavors, but you don't want it to be like overwhelming and overpowering, then I think this is a good beer.
Totally. Yeah, that lactose that's in there just, I mean, it's milk basically. Like, there's milk sugars and it just helps to smooth everything out, right? Like, it's the same kind of milk that goes in milk chocolate, right? And so on one hand, you've got like the 80% cacao chocolate that's sharp and pungent. And then you've got a bar of nice milk chocolate. Which one is going to be easier to eat and smoother? Well, it's the milk chocolate, right? Mm-hmm. It's the same milk that makes your coffee easier to drink instead of going full black. So I totally agree. It's a way to, it's like an introductory stout. This one in particular is a bit lighter as well. Sometimes you can like feel the milk, like you can feel the weight of the beer, you know, within your mouth. It has a little bit more body, but this one's a little bit lighter, makes it easier to drink, which again, it's also great if you're looking for maybe more of an introductory type of milk stout.
Yeah, for sure. All right, Matt, that's going to do it for this episode. Mm-hmm. And for listeners who they're like, you know what? There's a lot of questions. I've got a question of my own, though. Well, feel free to holler at us. We'd love to hear and take your question on an upcoming episode. You can find the simple instructions on our website at howtomoney.com/ask.
That's right. But Joel, that's going to be it, buddy, for this episode. Until next time.
Best friends out.
Best friends out.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
Hello, I'm Dr. Michael Mosley, and I want to let you know about my new immersive BBC Radio 4 podcast series, Deep Calm. It's all about how to tap into and activate a remarkable system that we all have hardwired inside of us, our relaxation response. And it's been developed to be listened to at any time you want to really unwind. I hope you'll listen wherever you get your BBC podcasts.
What are you looking for in a new smart TV? 4K picture quality? High quality and immersive sound? A sleek design? All of those are givens, but only the new Roku Pro Series has all of those and the Roku streaming experience and award-winning OS. Get fast, easy access to all your apps like iHeart, where you can stream all your favorite music, radio, and podcasts all day. And regular all-inclusive trips to Roku City. The new Roku Pro Series, a smart TV built by the streaming pros.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.